This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
It was Groundhog Day for the Tar Heels in South Bend. And while it was hardly North Carolina's most heartbreaking defeat of the season, it might be the most difficult to explain away. It makes no sense that the Tar Heels lost this game. North Carolina, they dominated the winning categories in basketball. In today's game, the first places I go to, how did you shoot it from three? How are you doing on the boards rebounding? And especially if you're playing on the road, how did you shoot from the foul line? North Carolina shot a higher percentage from three, 40% to Notre Dame's 32. They had a dominant rebounding edge, 47 boards to Notre Dame's 31, plus 16 there. Free throw shooting, a massive bugaboo for North Carolina. 12 of 14 from the line. Did not miss a foul shot in the second half. Notre Dame, on the other end, 10 of 17 from the free throw line. So those are winning numbers for the Tar Heels. I know you can immediately point to, Josh, what about the turnovers? And it's true. North Carolina had 12, Notre Dame only had 6. But when the lead slipped away, the Tar Heels only had 2 turnovers in the final 6 minutes of this game. And one of those was an illegal screen by Armando Bacot. Roy Williams, he was asked if it was nerves that set in for North Carolina. I didn't see nerves, and neither did Roy.
No, I mean, you guys think of it. What did they do that makes you, that you attribute to nerves? Seriously, we didn't go 0-for-5 from the line. Seriously, I'm asking you guys this. They made 3 big threes in the last 3 or 4 minutes. There was nothing in nerves. Cole missed the long shot. Maybe the turnovers could be a little bit that you're a little fidgety, but it's not nerves. The guys didn't go belly up. They made some mistakes, and Notre Dame really capitalized on them.
North Carolina was up 15-64 to 49 with around 8 minutes left to go. 12-2 run by Notre Dame made it close again, but then North Carolina hit a couple more big shots, and all of a sudden it's 73-64. You're thinking North Carolina's going to escape with it. 76-71 after Cole Anthony buried a massive 3-point shot. So it wasn't nerves at all. The only explanation is this. Notre Dame turned into a completely different basketball team the final 7 minutes of this game. For the first 33 minutes, the Irish were 6 of 26 from 3-point land. That is 26%. The final 7 minutes of this game, 5 for 8 from the line, from beyond the arc, excuse me. North Carolina, as I mentioned, dominated the boards, 47-31, plus 16 in that department. However, what happened when it was 76-71? Notre Dame gets an offensive rebound with Mooney. He goes up, gets fouled, makes 2 foul shots. What happens on the final possession of the game? Notre Dame misses for 2, gets an offensive rebound. It was Pfluger who kicked it out to Nate Lucheski, and you know the rest. Lucheski, by the way, a 30% 3-point shooter coming off the bench. Had single digits in the game before that final shot. So it's the most confounding loss of the year for North Carolina. Another major reason it's difficult for me to understand this and that it doesn't add up, much like Saturday's game against Virginia, North Carolina had the 2 best players on the floor. Cole Anthony, 23 points. He was efficient. Garrison Brooks was awesome yet again, 22 points. Brandon Robinson, he came back from injury. I told you he was close. He plays, and he plays well. Double digits off the bench. Christian Keeling, good for the 4th consecutive game. It's just hard for me to put a finger on why this happened to the Tar Heels. Robert Walsh is the producer of this show, taking your calls at 336-777-1600. Sawyer Dillon is in here as well. We'll have plenty of reaction to this game. Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels, will join us in 25 minutes. Then we'll have the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball in studio this hour. BDOT as well. We're on Twitter at Sports Hub Triad if you would like to chime in that way. So we played the Roy Williams cut that I found most interesting, but the one most people are reacting to today is this one right here.
You got two choices. You can compete your butt off, or you can get up in the fetal position and curl up and start crying. I'm not going to freaking do that. We're going to I apologize to everybody. We're going to freaking compete.
It almost sounded musical after he cursed. Him apologizing to everybody. One more time, can I hear that?
I apologize to everybody.
Howdy, everybody! One of my favorite cartoon characters of all time. Are people mad at Roy today?
No way. Not even close.
Tar Heel fans get it. They're more upset at what happened on the floor than Roy cursing. But I put this on Twitter and I feel the same way. When one of your go-to phrases is freaking, this is bound to happen. But that's the first time I've heard him drop the F-bomb before.
You're going to slip up. It's too close.
Playing with fire. Ed in Winston-Salem. I was thinking about you late last night with this game. Oh my God. Awful loss for the Tar Heels. It always seems like when UNC loses, you're one of the first calls we have lined up here. If you want in, 336-777-1600. Ed, what do you have for me today?
Yeah, no excuses, Josh. You know, I call a lot, and I never make excuses for the Tar Heels. And I thought you made some very big points yesterday, you know, about NC State and North Carolina difference. But it all boils down to one thing. This group of players, they're just not mentally tough as, you know, your normal Tar Heel teams. And then also, you know, we talked about this before about the basketball IQ, and it always seems like they're deer in the headlights here. Right at the end of the game, they just seem to panic and make, you know, just silly mistakes. So, you know, that's all I've got to offer, and hopefully they'll go on the road and make a good show against Louisville.
Thank you for the call, Ed. This isn't a good way to cheer up the show, but some historical perspective on today. 19 years ago today, we lost the Intimidator, Dale Earnhardt. He passed away, killed on the final lap of the Daytona 500. And I was thinking about Dale Earnhardt a lot today. And last night, with the disastrous weekend, NASCAR had to open up its season. It's the Great American Race. And the last thing you want on a racetrack is doubt. That's the last thing you want. We know some of the appeals to NASCAR, where you have these physics-defying metal, just man-made speed machines that can do damage and have done damage, killing spectators, killing drivers. And maybe over the last 19 years, we've become a little bit spoiled because nobody on the NASCAR circuit, or at least their top three series, have been killed in a race since Dale Earnhardt prompted NASCAR to make things safer 19 years ago today. But last night, all we had on that racetrack was doubt. All we could do was expect the worst. I give a lot of credit to the people who cover the sport. They weren't putting out speculative stuff. They weren't putting out misinformation. But it was terrifying seeing how everybody reacted around it and how little information existed, because that's the word I kept going back to watching the coverage: doubt. The last thing you want on a racetrack. There's a massive difference as well, if we're looking at reasons why it was disastrous this weekend for NASCAR. The good news is that Ryan Newman did not pass away. He was in critical condition last night. There have been statements put out saying that his injuries are not life-threatening. So that is the good news of the matter. It took a while before we arrived at that conclusion. But NASCAR needed good news, with attendance dwindling at a precipitous rate and the ratings becoming a massive problem as well. There's a massive difference between a Sunday afternoon finish to the Great American Race and a Monday afternoon restart. You have the flair of the President of the United States telling the drivers to fire up their engines, you know? And everybody's following, and everybody's off of work Monday, it's just a different deal. And the last reason it just sucks is because it was a race where nobody cared about the result. Robert, do you even know who won the Daytona 500 last night?
No clue.
Denny Hamlin won the race. But who cares about Denny Hamlin's win today? It's all about Ryan Newman and figuring out if he's going to be able to drive again or whatever, what the degrees of his injuries are. So that's something I couldn't help thinking about following all of the coverage today. And it was just a really tough weekend in Daytona. A lot of stuff we're going to do today. As I mentioned, Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels, in 20 minutes after that. B-Dot, the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball, will join us in studio. But it's not just North Carolina's loss to Notre Dame we're talking about today. The Blue Devils, right now, they're at the top of the standings in the ACC. We just put out our new ACCSports.com rankings, 1 through 15. And with the Blue Devils, there is something unprecedented going on with their freshman big man Vernon Carey's draft profile. I'll tell you exactly what that is next on The Drive.
Here's your mic check.
Check. Mic check.
Test. Check. Check.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Mooney, jump stop in the paint. His hook shot off the mark. Pfluger with an offensive rebound. Out to an open Leshesky. His three is good.
That was the voice of the Tar Heels, Jones Angel, calling the finish last night of North Carolina's latest loss, that one in South Bend, to the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. We're now being joined by Jones. And Jones, most of this year has been pretty explainable. Okay, North Carolina, they've struggled this year. You point to all that they lost in Luke May, Cam Johnson, among others, Kenny Williams, who were at the game on Saturday night against Virginia, no longer being here. Coby White, Desir Little, they leave to go to the NBA. The injuries, Cole Anthony being out a month and a half, Anthony Harris, Sterling Manley, none of those guys are available. But last night, it's one of the more confounding losses this year because the winning areas of basketball, three-point shooting, rebounding, free throws, North Carolina, they were dominant in those areas. Granted, the 12 turnovers aren't good, but only two of them came in the final 6 minutes of the game. So how do you best explain what the difference was last night?
Well, you know, Roy Williams likes to say that the other team has the right to try and win the game too. And I think that Notre Dame really played well down the stretch. I don't know this number exactly, Josh. I'm going to guess they were something like 10 of their last 13, or I know at one point they were 8 of 9 there down the stretch as far as shooting the basketball. And so they made a bunch of shots. And so I do think that them making some plays, hitting some threes, T.J. Gibbs got really hot from three, made a couple of big ones that got Notre Dame back in it. I think once they got the momentum going in the right direction, Carolina unfortunately has been in that situation multiple times this year, and I do think at some point when you are continuously on the wrong side of that it feeds into the next time that you're in that situation, and you have to actively be able to break out of it. And Carolina hasn't been able to actively break out of it yet. And so I do think there have been times this year in some of these close losses, Clemson and Duke most notably, that I think Carolina could very pointedly look at itself and go, you didn't do this to win the game, and you probably should have done that, and most of the time you do that. This game, to me, Carolina had a couple bad possessions late, but it was more about what Notre Dame did than what Carolina didn't do down the stretch.
You've been the voice of the Tar Heels for about a decade now, but been following North Carolina basketball a lot longer. When people think about the more frustrating years the Tar Heels have had, they go to the Doherty years. But even though the record North Carolina has this year is better than the ones that Doherty had, especially the 8-20 season in 2002, does this one sting more because it's a Hall of Fame coach in Roy Williams and you have a lottery pick in Cole Anthony and just the manner of some of these losses? What do you think?
Well, the 8-20 team wasn't any good. Yeah, that team couldn't compete with ACC-level competition. That's not to say, you know, they had a couple players, Juwan Williams, Jackie Manuel, Melvin Scott most notably, who later in their career were huge impact players on a championship team. I think most Tar Heel fans know that story. But that 8-20 team was not any good. This team is not anywhere close to that. This team is competitive. This team has pieces to compete in the ACC. The Tar Heels certainly have not had all of those pieces all of the time this year. They haven't played together very often, and that has made this a more challenging season, and you went through some of the injuries earlier that have certainly affected the Tar Heels. That's not to be used as an excuse. I think it's just a fact of the story of this year for Carolina. But this team is nowhere close to that team. So if that makes it more frustrating or sting more, because I think this team does have the potential to compete and could have done something more than it has done to this point, then sure. And it's tough. I mean, being on that bus and that plane last night wasn't much fun. You know, the guys are feeling every single one of these games. And I think you saw it when Brandon Robinson, you know, missed that last second shot last night. He just kind of stayed on the floor for an extra second. We've seen Garrison Brooks do that after a game this year. It takes a toll. And to have it happen as much as it has happened, particularly twice in, you know, whatever it was, 48 hours or 72 hours between Virginia and then last night against Notre Dame, certainly that exacerbates the situation.
I think it does make it more painful. It goes back to one of my favorite quotes from over 100 years ago from the great Hayward Brown. He once said that the biggest tragedy in life isn't that you lose, it's that you almost win. And North Carolina has certainly come close to winning, as you said, more competitive than that 2002 team, but so many nights like last night, as we've come to learn. What's the hardest you've ever seen Coach Williams take a loss?
Every single time that they lose, he takes it hard. And I think he takes it personally. And by that I mean, he personally feels responsibility for every loss. And he feels that to his players. He feels that to his staff. He feels that to former players. He feels that to people who love Carolina. I think that's why Roy Williams, in addition to a lot of other things, has been so successful at Carolina, because he cares about it. He deeply cares about it. And it drives him to be successful and to work the way that he works to try to make his team be as good as it can possibly be on a year-in and year-out basis. And so though that hard work and that effort that he has put in and that his players have put in, when it's not showing results at the end of the day, I do think that's very difficult. But, you know, certainly anybody who's been involved in the game for as long as Coach Williams has been, there are going to be heartbreaking defeats and there are going to be exhilarating wins. That's just the nature of athletics. To have as many as Carolina has had in such a short amount of time, I do think is unique. And like I mentioned earlier, I do think it's starting to wear on everyone involved. And by that, I mean the players and the coaches, because they're the ones living it every day. And so, yes, he has taken things hard, but that's not unusual. That's who he is.
Last thing for the voice of the Tar Heels, Jones Angel, who's with us here on Sports Hub Triad. 3 weeks from today, it's going to be the end of the five-year wait in the Triad. The ACC tournament will be returning to Greensboro. Whether it's a television being rolled into a lunchroom in Jacksonville, North Carolina, or watching the tournament in person as the voice of the Tar Heels, what are some of your favorite memories of the ACC tournament in Greensboro?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, the ACC tournament is not what it used to be, number one. And that is not a slap at the tournament. It's just the nature of athletics now. It used to be, and I am not old enough to remember the days of you had to win it to go to the NCAA tournament. That's not what I'm talking about, although certainly that added another aspect to the tournament as well. But I think as large as the ACC has gotten, it's a marathon now to get through the ACC tournament. It's not the local neighborly event that it used to be, when you played Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and everybody knew everybody in every single game, and you knew every single player on every single team. That's just not the case anymore. I mean, you start on Tuesday now. Carolina's more than likely going to have to play on Tuesday, which is insane, and so for many reasons. And so the fact that it is such a different event now, I do think changes some of your feelings about it, or at least it did for me. Now, having said all of that, Carolina certainly has had some wonderful memories in that event. If we're talking about Greensboro specifically, certainly the 2011 tournament was a memorable one for Carolina in more recent years. They had that big comeback against Miami in the quarterfinals. Tyler Zeller had a buzzer beater to win it. Then Harrison Barnes put up 40 points in the semifinals. It was a Carolina-Duke matchup in the championship. Carolina was out of gas at that point in that game, and it was a good Duke team that year, too, and Duke ended up winning the title. The 98 tournament, that 98 team is still, in my opinion, maybe the best, and certainly one of the best, along with 84 and 77 and 87 and some others, the best Carolina team to not win the national championship, and certainly, again, one of, if not the, and they were flexing their muscles that tournament in Greensboro in 1998. And, you know, other teams have had great moments there too. Certainly Randolph-Childress and Wake Forest, and, you know, Duke had that long run of success in the tournament. And so Greensboro does a wonderful job. Coliseum is a wonderful arena for it. The people there care. They're interested in it. And it does, in my opinion, it's the best spot for it. So looking forward to being there. Carolina hopes that it's there for several days, and it's going to have to be if it wants to advance any further than Greensboro coming up here in a few weeks.
Jones, have a great call Saturday in Louisville. We'll next see you when NC State's coming into Chapel Hill next week. Thanks for doing this.
Sounds good, Josh. Talk to you soon.
Got it. That's Jones Angel, the voice of the Tar Heels. Kind enough to spend a little time here. In terms of how hard Roy Williams takes losses, one sticks out to me. Recently, I was talking to a former Tar Heel player who remembered Coach Williams as an assistant and told me the story of how when he was coaching the JV team, this player would get ready for a game, and they're getting set to play NC State one night. And in the corner of the locker room, he sees Coach Williams in tears, crying. And he had to go up to another coach and say, yo, what's going on with Coach Williams? Is everything okay with him? And someone said, I think so, but the JV team just lost a game. Roy Williams was in tears over the JV team losing. Dean Smith. Apparently, the last time Dean Smith and Roy Williams had dinner, the night before he was set to go to Kansas and become the head coach and be introduced, the one piece of advice that Dean Smith gave him, or one of the pieces of advice, was to be better at taking losses. And I don't know if he's gotten better, but it still seems like in these post-game press conferences, he takes it pretty darn hard. Okay. From the official voice of the Tar Heels to the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball, B-Dot in studio, there are three things about this North Carolina season we've never seen before. I'll tell you what those things are when B-Dot joins the show next.
What the hell is this?
The Drive.
This is kind of a great thing, and I'll tell you what.
Get caught up with all things sports.
That's awesome!
Well, that's not totally true. He talks about The Bachelorette, too.
Yes!
The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
We like to take swings around here. Some of them are strikeouts. Some float over the fence. I don't know if we're like a modern-day slugger where it's you're batting 241 and you have over 200 strikeouts in a season. I'd like to think we're like one of those old-school sluggers, like a Jason Giambi, something like that. You might can argue our show's on PEDs. That might be fair. I don't know. Robert, are you on anything performance-enhancing-wise?
I plead the fifth.
B-Dot's in studio with us, the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball. And this is an example of us taking a swing. It is our example of trying something out. We first workshopped it a week ago, and it was all off the cuff. Robert just pulling random sound, and B-Dot coming up with some urban terminology right on the fly, trying to see if I knew what it meant.
Do you remember what that word was?
I think it was Cap'n.
And what does capping mean?
Lion.
Good job.
So I'm learning things.
Good job.
And the reason B-Dot wants to do this is because he knows I work in sports.
Yes.
Which means I'm in locker rooms, NFL, college basketball, NBA. So if I'm going to be around different cultures, I need to know how to communicate. Because
correct.
If you can't tell by my nasal, concerned-sounding voice, I'm somebody that sounds Caucasian. That's probably the best way to put it. There's nothing wrong with that. But self-improvement-wise, I think there's always areas to grow. So, this is B-Dot's Grammar School. See what we did there? A little bit of wordplay.
Had to put your name
in. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is my show. My name's on it.
Jesus Christ.
What we do. So, I'm going to be taking the school.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking.
In high school, he didn't play sports, but he did wear a helmet.
And just when you think it can't get any worse.
My English teacher wanted to flunk me in junior high.
Damn.
Thanks a lot. Next semester, I'll be 35.
Josh is going to attempt to learn B-Dot's vernacular.
I'm from the old school. I got a little street knowledge. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
It's time for B-Dot's Grammar School.
I like it. Last week, we gave you Cap, and you were correct. Cap is live.
I was not correct. I got it wrong, but I remembered what it was a week removed. So here's what we're going to do. You give the word, I guess. I try to guess it, and while that's happening, I'll give out the phone number, and we'll see if anybody can crack and assist me what it means.
To see if you're learning, is there anybody in sports this week that has been capping?
Mason Rudolph. He's capping.
He's capping. Mason Rudolph has been capping this week.
I believe.
Can I get a bell for Josh right there for doing a great job?
I believe Miles Garrett.
All right. This word's weak. What is the definition of loud? L-O-U-D. Loud.
336-777-1600. 777-1600. If you could tell us what loud means. I can go ahead and eliminate, like, when things around you, the volume's up so much that it hurts, like, your ears, that type of loud. I don't think that's what we're talking about
here. Thank you for eliminating that.
Uh-huh. So, that's eliminated. Sawyer seems confident he knows what it means.
Yeah, look at Sawyer.
Robert immediately understood what was being said.
Those should all be hints to you. I think we got somebody here to help you out, Josh.
All right.
All right. They told me that Kyle from Big Bad Burlington is here to help you.
All right. Go ahead, Kyle.
All right. First of all, I got to say this because it made you happy last time. What's up, homie?
What's happening?
All right. So loud, I'm going to give you a synonym because I can't incriminate myself. But it also means potent.
It does mean potent.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. I think I understand.
That's my boy, Kyle.
Let's see if someone else can give us a different definition. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. This is kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where I'm getting the phone callers coming in and giving me information.
Yeah.
Let's go to Keenan, who's in High Point. Keenan, we had potent as being a definition for loud. What words would you use to describe it?
Loud is for some electric lettuce, some jazz cabbage, that kush.
Yeah.
All right, get about it.
Hey, anybody from High Point will definitely know what loud is.
I got one more hint for you.
What's that?
It smells as if something, one like of our delivery drivers that bring Jenny food, it's what they smell like.
Jesus, yeah. That's a good sentence for loud. Don't come in here smelling all loud. There we go.
336-777-1600. I'm getting some clues here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to investigate and see exactly what this means.
Computer.
I'll stay off
your computer.
I have an iPad. I don't have a computer. Well,
get off of your iPad.
We'll take one more call as I try to dissect what the word might mean. Mike, what do you got to help us out here?
Hey, Josh. It's Mike from Burlington, friend of your dad's. Oh, my dad is a DARE police officer, so do you know what loud means?
Yeah, I think I might have it. I'm going to go with a high-quality, potent marijuana, like your previous caller was trying to say, I believe.
That's exactly what it is.
Shouts to the police. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks, officer.
There you go. Officer Mike.
Yeah, Officer Mike.
Appreciate it, 12.
Yeah, for sure. That's next week's word. Stop it.
All right. So I just took all that information. It's something regarding, like, a potent smell. So I'm going to say loud means when something smells really good, like a nice pie on a Sunday afternoon.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
I'm wrong?
You're super wrong.
Oh, my God. What does it mean?
Loud is marijuana, and it is when marijuana is super, super potent. It's so strong that it's loud.
Shoot.
Yeah.
Dagnabbit.
Dagnabbit. Roy Williams.
I thought I had it.
I did, too. Don't make a mockery of my segment.
I'm not making a mockery of the segment. We've made a mockery of a lot of things on this show.
Cap and loud. Those are the two terms that we've done so far.
I've got it written down. And I think we also hit 12.
Yeah, and we hit 12.
On the way out.
But you need to understand.
No, don't hit 12. You need to understand something
about
loud.
How great is that? My dad, he knows my dad. He runs a lot of the DARE stuff in the state of North Carolina. I think that needs to be emphasized that he probably knows my dad because my dad, he probably helped him on how to teach young people not to do drugs.
Stay away from the loud.
Oh, so it's like a noun like that.
It can be two things. That's what I wanted to let you know. Like, the people can have loud. I might see somebody in the locker room. He might say, hey, Dot, you got some loud? I'm like, I might can get you some loud. Or you might smell someone who smells loud. And he's like, God, somebody just walked in here smelling loud as hell. See, there's two different ways you can use it.
There are some locker rooms that do smell loud as hell.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right. Talk amongst yourselves. I need to figure out a real sentence to use it in. Yes. I think that's the way we need the cap. Different cap. Of these segments. I wasn't trying to do that. I actually used the word cap in a different white Caucasian context.
Yes, you did. And it was horrible
right,
in my segment.
You get your sentence up. I loved that the callers were all trying to dance around it without actually giving it to them. I think that's the way it should move forward. Also, don't try to use the words that we already taught you in the wrong way. Like, you already knew cap. You're not going to cap it off. That means you're going to start with a lie.
Yeah, that's not what we need here. I do appreciate the folks that called up 777-1600 and participated. And I do agree with you, Rob, 100%. Moving forward, let them come in and sort of give hints to this one to see if he can guess them.
I got a sentence. Are you ready?
Let's hear it.
The Carolina Panthers were interested in signing Josh Gordon, but it just turns out he's too loud.
No.
I feel like that's like you got like a 68 on a test.
Yes.
Like you didn't fail it.
Here we go. Let me fix it.
Okay. I got it better.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you do.
I think I do. Marty Herney asked Cam Newton, hey, should we sign Josh Gordon? Cam says, nah, he too loud. Damn it.
No, he's only loud if he smells like loud when he's around.
Yeah.
Like Cam would say, in that same situation, Cam's response would be, nah, you know he got a problem with the loud.
Oh, got it.
All right, so give it a shot. Give it a shot.
Okay.
Use the loud as a noun now.
Got it.
Yeah.
I thought I did before, but no, let's do this one more time.
It was a different noun.
The Panthers will not sign Josh Gordon.
Why not?
Because he got a problem with that loud.
Whoa! Oh, my God.
Yes, sir!
Dude.
Yes, sir!
B-Dot, thanks for being here today, buddy. That's the unofficial mascot of Tar Heel basketball. B-Dot in studio with us. He'll be here next week as well. The ACC tournament begins in Greensboro 3 weeks from today. However, if it started today, what would the matchups be? What would be the top storylines? I'll tell you next on The Drive.
Proudly broadcasting to an audience that clearly deserves something better. Boy, you guys are not sucking me into the story at all. I'm just telling you for your own benefit.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Last night's Bachelor episode delivered, as Sawyer predicted it would. He walked into my office yesterday and said, "Yo, are you ready for tonight?" He's a North Carolina basketball fan, so I thought he was talking about his Tar Heels. Nope, Sawyer is a Fairweather fan. Pretty much all he's been, during the entire time he's been alive, the Tar Heels have been good. So Sawyer decides he's not going to watch his team play. Instead, he's just excited about The Bachelor. I had an iPad with the North Carolina game on. I was watching The Bachelor simultaneously with that. It was an exciting night. We're down to three remaining. It's the fantasy suite round next week. Exhilarating stuff. We have imaging for this. This is growing into becoming one of the more popular segments we do each week. It is our Bachelor Minute.
So it's another ongoing, never-ending series of The Bachelor. Will Pete push the limits of what's acceptable on national TV?
Yes.
Is Pete here with the intentions of hooking up with as many of the contestants as possible?
Yeah! Yes!
Or is it simply the free booze?
Woohoo!
Pete is on the clock. Welcome to the Bachelor Minute.
All righty. Charles Barkley and Bruce Pearl made appearances in this episode of The Bachelor. Why? Well, Madison, who's the favorite, lives in Auburn in a home that's almost adjacent to Jordan-Hare Stadium. Seems to be a pretty well-off family. Her dad is the director of basketball operations with Auburn basketball, so there are ties with basketball that relate to Madison that I found interesting. More on the dad in a second. So, the guy's well connected with Auburn basketball, walks into Auburn Arena, and on the scoreboard is Chuck saying, "Listen here, you idiot. Don't break her heart, Peter."
Is that Peter Griffin from Family Guy?
Terrible. Just terrible. That impression. Then it's Bruce Pearl walking out, and he had the line of the night. See, if you make it the hometown dates, you're in the Final Four. Auburn made it to the Final Four last year. Sorry to bring that up, Tar Heel fans. Ooh. He said to Madison, "Congrats on making your second Final Four, Maddie." Great line.
Groan.
And I appreciate The Bachelor for making sure they insult our intelligence by having jerseys, Auburn jerseys ready for them, and not having the last names of Peter and Madison on them, just having their first names written on the back.
So it just says Peter.
Peter and Madison on the back of the Auburn jerseys, as if you would ever wear that again, which has me thinking. Like,
oh, that's terrible.
What would you think if you saw me wearing a jersey that says Josh?
I would call you the biggest goober on the planet, man.
Is he Brazilian? Just got one name here? Is that what's going on? So they played pickup. Peter has a pretty clean jumper, I'm going to be honest. Sawyer, what'd you think?
Oh, no, it was absolutely terrible. He had like the one foot stepping in front of the other one. No can do.
Clear front runner, Madison. She's your pick from the beginning. I passed on her. I had the Greg Oden of a first overall pick.
Mm.
I went with Sarah, who got eliminated like two or three episodes in. You had the second pick, which turned out to be Kevin Durant, as Madison is the favorite. However, I still think she's going to be the Bachelorette. I think Hannah Ann, who Robert somehow swiped in and had as his candidate, I think, honestly, she's probably going to win because it seems Madison doesn't love Peter back. She hasn't said, "I love you" back to Peter.
So what do I get?
So Hannah Ann, I think, might actually win this entire thing.
I'm back, and I'm better than ever.
Can I get to a gripe I have with her dad?
I saw her dad was trending. What happened?
He asked her, what does your dad do? Oh, he coaches under Bruce Pearl. He's a basketball coach. No, he isn't. The Bachelor lies to you. Oh, yeah. Colton.
quarterback. This guy used to play football professionally. He was on a practice squad and got cut after a week. Yeah, that guy's a pro athlete, Colton. And this is very loose, their definitions of things here. This guy, Madison's dad, is not a basketball coach. He's a director of basketball ops. I'll explain what they do very quickly. They're the ones that are responsible for travel, like trying to figure out what itineraries are for the team. If there's certain food that they need on the plane before they get there, they're not on the staff to coach. They're a part of the support staff. Nothing wrong with that. Just don't say he's a basketball coach because that's not what he is. Secondly, in last night's Bachelor, Hannah Ann got the job done wearing Tiger Sunday red. She decided to wear red on the hometown date. The family was cool. Didn't seem to be any crazies. Crazy enough. If you're a Final Four contestant on The Bachelor, odds are you're not bad looking. You're probably an attractive woman. In all four instances, there was, or three out of the four instances, there was a sister that was more attractive than the Bachelor contestant.
This is where you lost me. Kelsey's sisters just didn't quite do it for me, but Hannah Ann and Madison, or Hannah Ann's sister was smoking.
I need to know how the moms look, though, because that's like the future representation of how these women, how do their moms look?
All good.
All pretty good. So Peter's nice. In good shape there. They went on an axe throwing date. Probably not the best place to take Peter after he cut open his entire head running into a freaking... Gotta be careful, Roy Williams.
My finger is above the dump button.
Yeah, running into a golf cart, cutting his head there. Probably axe throwing, not the greatest deal. How's that a thing, by the way? Axe throwing, don't they serve alcohol there too?
Yes, they do.
Just incredibly dangerous.
We love living
so Hannah Ann, she's through to the final three and to the fantasy suites. So is it gonna be Kelsey or is it gonna be Victoria F? The entire episode wanted you to swerve and think that that Kelsey was going to get through, but it was obvious Kelsey and Pete, they weren't smiling at each other. They weren't enjoying the date. They were so bored with each other. Victoria F, she's a disaster, but Peter seems to be very attracted to her. Peter's attracted to Victoria F, wanted her to get through. And what was crazy is we didn't even see her family. It might be the first time someone got sent through to the final round after hometown dates, and we don't even meet the family because things blew up in the parking lot. So it's down to the final three, Victoria F., Hannah Ann, and it is going to be Madison as well. You guys are telling me to wrap up The Bachelor a minute. Last I checked, this is my damn radio show. What's going on? I get there's breaking news, Sawyer. We have time. We're going to get to it
in a second.
We'll
get to the breaking news.
Yeah, we'll get to the breaking news. It doesn't mean the radio show has to end. So, yes, there is breaking news that we'll get to in a minute. But we have important stuff here. I'm talking about The Bachelor here.
Jesus.
Holy bleep. Tell me to go on more and more.
Let's go.
Yeah, keep it up here.
Victoria F. Still the worst.
But we know why she's there.
Yeah, Peter wants to get to the fantasy suite. So there's going to be some drama in next week's episode. All right, Robert, that's the end of the Bachelor Minute. Was that quick enough for you, Sawyer? Are you okay?
Maybe a little 30 seconds too long, but
is everything going to be all right? The Carolina Panthers, former tight end Greg Olsen, has signed a one-year, $7 million contract with the Seattle Seahawks. This just went down, and we knew it was either going to be the Seahawks, the Bills, or the Washington Redskins. The Redskins, even though Ron Rivera is in place there, it didn't make much sense. Considering he didn't want to be a part of a rebuild with Carolina, why would he want to be a part of a rebuild in Washington if he's going to play just one more season? So it really was down to Buffalo and Seattle. I thought Buffalo would be a better fit because familiarity is a very important thing. I think if you've been speaking a certain language, a certain verbiage for a decade, why not go to the place that does things similarly? Buffalo does that. Brandon Beans in leadership, he came from the Carolina Circle. Sean McDermott is a former Ron Rivera assistant. You got Dan Morgan in that building. You got former teammates in that building. I think Buffalo is more on an upward swing,
Josh Allen, he plays a similar style. Cam Newton does. I thought that was a better fit. But Seattle, that's a playoff team from last year. And how many guys, Robert, were hurt from that team a year ago?
Just
look at the backfield.
Yeah.
Like Rashad Penny hurt. Wasn't Chris Carson hurt before that playoff game?
Off and on, yeah.
Yeah. So the Seahawks, they were banged up and still made the postseason. I think this is an example of Greg saying, I'm going to take my chances with the quarterback and the head coach who have had the most success in this league. That is where I'm going to take my chances. While Buffalo might look like a better roster on paper, the New England Patriots have run that division for a very long time. And I would still say today, Tom Brady has a better chance of returning to New England than going anywhere else. So if Brady is in that division, and you're talking about one year, one more opportunity. I don't know why it sounds like 8 Mile. Got one shot, one opportunity here.
Get that spaghetti off your chest.
You have one chance. Why would you sign with Buffalo, which has been to 2 playoff games in the last 22 years? Why would you choose that and going up against Belichick and the Patriots over a team that was in the playoffs last year that has a Super Bowl winning head coach? Probably should have been a twice Super Bowl head coach, and the reason he wasn't was because of that Bill Belichick guy. And pair yourself with somebody who's one of the 3 best quarterbacks in the sport last year. And he's also a mobile quarterback. You know, Cam Newton, he had success with it. And tight ends, they've worked pretty well in Seattle with Russell. So I liked either of those places as fits for Greg Olson. If you have a reaction to this, 336-777-1600 is the phone number. On Twitter at SportsUpTriad, the breaking news, Greg Olson, he has signed a 1-year, $7 million deal with the Seattle Seahawks. That has to be the most difficult division in football. That's probably the biggest reason I valued Buffalo more than I valued Seattle. You have the defending NFC champion San Francisco 49ers, who are going to be back next year. Who are they losing off that team? Everybody is essentially back. You have the LA Rams, who won the NFC the previous year. And while they had a tough season, their tough season was still 9-7. You're going to have to compete with that. The Arizona Cardinals did not have a bad season last year. A lot of improvement from being the worst team in the NFL. And you got a quarterback who's going into his second year in Kyler Murray. So nothing is going to be interesting there as well. Adam Schefter was the one to report this. He added this. Greg Olson really liked Buffalo and Washington. Strongly considered both. But the lure of playing with Russell Wilson in Seattle was just too strong. So Olson took the 1-year deal. Robert, what are you looking at there?
Just looking at the injured players the players who won't return for the 49ers next year.
Anybody of interest?
Emmanuel Sanders, who they traded for. He was on an expiring contract. And then up front.
And he would be foolish to go anywhere else.
I would imagine so. Then 3 starters on defense. You got Arik Armstead, who I believe they have the opportunity to pick up his 5th-year option.
Yeah, they have a 5th-year option on Armstead.
And Sheldon Day.
And you got DeForest Buckner still on that defensive line.
Yep.
He's signed. You still have Solomon Thomas. You still have Bosa going into his second year. That's still going to be one of the better defensive lines.
Yeah, Jimmy Ward as well. That's about it.
So the 49ers, they're going to be there. The LA Rams contract situation's a lot more tricky, but that's still an excellent head coach in Sean McVay. It's not going to be easy for Greg Olson, but if your job, it might have just come down to this, as Schefter mentioned a second ago, or Schefter just tweeted a second ago. I am making a living as a tight end catching passes. One of the best pass-catching tight ends in the history of the sport. That's not hyperbole. If I'm making a living doing this, I want whoever is the best at the throwing the football thing to play for. It might have boiled down to that. Okay, Russell Wilson, Josh Allen, Dwayne Haskins slash a miracle Alex Smith return. Who do I want to play throwing me the football? I want it to be Russell Wilson. What I'm more interested in this moment, still a lot for us to learn. Two things. Greg's still going to do the XFL broadcast? Because he's really good on those. Really good on Sunday. And number two, Sawyer, why were you trying to rush me so much to get out of the Bachelor Minute when you're just sitting there staring at your phone the moment I got to Greg Olson?
Well, see, the thing was, I just remember sometimes you would get upset that it would break and then you would have enough time to talk about it. So I wanted to make sure that, like, you knew what was going on. And then also afterwards you would be like, I wish we
did
got
you
to talk
not
about that.
Hear. Okay. I'm going to take you behind the show a little bit.
Yeah.
Robert has the capability to press a button and talk in my ear in a way that you can't hear on the air. Robert may have said something into my headphone that you can't hear right now that only I can hear. And it's playing with fire, just like Roy Williams did last night, saying freaking a ton until he didn't say freaking. Well, moments ago, Robert said, while I was doing the Bachelor Minute, Greg Olson just signed with the Seattle Seahawks. So I thought, great, we're going to get to that in a second. But you were sitting right next to him and heard him say that, and you still said, oh, we need to rush it. We need to rush it, as if I didn't consume this information. So what happens? You just want me to rush to the Bachelor Minute, and we sit here at 5:47, and there are still 2 minutes left to go in this segment, and I'm done with everything I have to say about Greg Olson.
We can talk about the cows that passed away a couple hours ago.
Please don't. I don't want any more angry phone calls.
But yes, I thought Robert was referring to me, and then I was like, oh, and then I realized you might have heard it, and then it was just too far in, and I had to make sure to get the point across.
And I'll take partial blame for turning his mic on so quickly after telling him that. He wasn't really saying it to you. He was saying it more
to
me.
Yeah, I just heard him muttering into the microphone. You also have headphones. Can you not hear that?
No, this mic comes in really low, so I don't really know when I'm talking to myself or not.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating sometimes how bad at radio we are.
Not as frustrated as that trailer driver was when he killed those 21 cows.
He didn't kill the cows.
I mean, he did not kill the cows. He threw them onto the side of the road.
Is I-40 still going to be a wreck on the drive home?
I'm not sure. That's what my buddy was telling me, is that he was driving through when they were cleaning it up this morning, and I'm not lying to you. He said you could hear the
stop.
I know it was the worst.
Stop.
I feel bad.
I don't want to hear it. Should we do another memorial very quickly?
I'd have to pull the music up.
Yeah, we need the music very quickly. You know, it's really sad. We were all held up in traffic this morning. Robert was really mad. He was texting me. And then he learned it was this trailer that tipped over and, man, bunch of cows. Do we know it was just cows or was it livestock? Just livestock altogether.
All cows.
Spend all your time waiting for that second chance.
Whoa.
Everything okay. There's some reason to feel not good enough.
You're gonna be missed, Kat.
And it's hard at the end of the day.
Robert, tell me, what do you got and take it to the house?
An owner of some loud used a different way to get rid of some intruders.
I know what that word means. We'll take it to the house next.